My question is, I've got two questions. One, are you able to do these measurements day and night? And the second question is, do orbiting satellites have any problem interfering what happens with the square kilometer array? And particularly, I'm thinking about swarms of CubeSats. Does that have any impact?
Yeah, exactly. So radio signals are very good because you can look at them day and night. So they don't have the sun is a fairly weak source of radio waves in some sense. So you can work in the daytime, you can work in the nighttime. So radio waves are really good astronomy. Radio astronomy goes 24/7. Satellites are a problem. So the existing satellites we know about that broadcast a particular signal, we can be aware of the frequency they broadcast out. We can actually block that frequency. But as these swarms of satellites develop, that's going to be a real problem. Not so much for the radio astronomy, but for the optical astronomy, because those lots and lots, hundreds of thousands of little shiny objects in the sky tend to block out things you can see with your eyes. But in the radio part of the spectrum, they also broadcast very strong signals. Fortunately for the SKA, most of those satellite communication, the constellations, the Starlink constellations, are working at much higher frequencies than what the SKA will work. So they're working at 11 to 20 kind of gigahertz at the moment. The SKA is mostly working at 5 gigahertz and below. So we dodge that. Doesn't mean to say other radio astronomers aren't affected. They are a high frequency radio astronomers, but we can dodge them for SKA.
Bruce, how different is this square kilometre array now to the original first Australian bid that was made?
So the first Australian bid was to have basically the entire system, both the low frequency and the mid frequency array in Australia, extending all the way across Australia, maybe even over to New Zealand. When we looked at it internationally and we looked at the bid from South Africa and looked at the benefit and the cost and benefit, if you like, of splitting the array, it actually worked out to be okay that we could put the mid frequency in the South African side because it was okay for the mid frequency and the low frequency in Australia. Because the science cases were quite separate, you don't have to run them at the same time and connect the dots. You can actually run them as independent sort of entities. So yeah, so it's a 50-50 model rather than a 100% model. That's the main difference.
Fantastic. You mentioned cooperation involving China. Are there any geopolitical implications or constraints with China, the way the world is at the moment?
Yeah, look, it's always an ongoing something we have to look at. I mean, the Chinese have been involved with the SKA from day one. They've just recently built the world's largest single dish radio telescope in China. That's 500 meters across, and they intend to build more of them. So they're a very powerful scientific research community. But our governments and our universities and our organizations, of course, we have to exercise due caution when certain topics are raised about, technologies and sharing technology. So look, it's a balancing act between wanting to work together as scientists and build bridges and perhaps circumvent some of the other bridges.
Yes, for sure. I think science has done that for many years, hasn't it? Being able to bypass or
Provides a form
step
of
above the
dialogue.
political fray.
When things are tough politically, it's nice to have at least something to talk about that's not quite so bad.
There's no links to ALMA or LSST, both big data astronomy sites in Chile. Are there any plans to network with the Chilean observatory?
So ALMA is a radio telescope with a very, very high frequency radio telescope. LSST is an optical telescope, so it takes images that you, like you see with your eye. What happens these days is most of these big observatories, they take the data, they process the data, make it into a final form, they put it into a scientific archive, a data repository, a digital repository, right? So that's where the data lives. And over the last 15 years, there's been a big effort around the world called virtual observatory, which does exactly what you just said, but it does it on the internet. It connects the data archives together. So as an astronomer, you could sit down to your computer and say, I want to see an image from ALMA, an image from LSST, an image from SKA, and I want to put them together and do some science with it. You can do that now thanks to the Virtual Observatory International work. So you don't have to physically connect them with wires. You do it in the data space.
Apart from mapping the sky, what is likely to be the most interesting observable phenomena or for prioritizing SKA tasking?
Look, I mean, one of the nice things about telescopes is you design them for particular amazing reasons, like finding the edge of the universe and stuff like that. But almost always they become famous for things you never designed them to do. The serendipity is a huge factor in astronomy. And even just with the precursor telescopes we have here in Australia, they found these things called fast radio bursts, which are very, very violent, very big bursts of energy from radio sources in the universe that last only a few milliseconds. They weren't known before, okay, at all. And so because we've got these telescopes, we've discovered them. So you almost always discover really interesting things along the way. I think obviously SK is designed to detect the signal from the very first objects that ever form, which is a very high priority for it. But, you know, other things like, you know, finding signals from extraterrestrials is also possible, because it's extremely big set of ears to listen to the universe as well. So, you know, I'm sure we'll get surprised and excited about what we find.
And you've got plenty of space over in Western Australia for them to land as well. So
it's a
bonus.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Can you please speculate about what FRBs are?
So fast radio bursts, as I said, there are these incredibly bright sources of radio energy, and they're very short duration, milliseconds. The most popular theory is it's some sort of explosive event, basically a whole, maybe a binary set of stars or an individual star effectively exploding with great violence. And I'm not talking about supernova. Supernova is when it's a normal star, like something a little bit bigger than the sun, but it explodes. But you can also detonate, make explode other really exotic things like neutron stars. And so when these things collide or explode, you know, you can produce enormous amounts of energy. And I mean, that may be the source of the FRBs. To be honest with you, I don't think anybody's got a conclusive theory right now, but there's a number of ideas.
The same question I asked, is that merging of black holes? Would that be something that theoretically?
We don't think that is probably not the source. It probably is something a bit more visible, I guess, not a black hole, but probably a very dense star system of some description.
Right. I assume you would have been very saddened by the Arecibo collapse. What impact does that have? What other things have? Well, is there other instruments, or would your instrument take over some of what that was doing? Or
So Arecibo was a great telescope. It contributed a lot to astronomy. It was about 300 meters across or so, and it produced a lot of really interesting science. The telescope that's just been built by the Chinese, the FAST telescope, is 500 meters across. So it would have superseded Arecibo even if it had survived in some sense. So I think Arecibo's days were kind of numbered a little bit, but it's just very sad to see a telescope go in such a dramatic way.
Mm. Would you be able to gauge the speed of the expansion of the SKA? Like how quickly is this going to be? When is it aimed to be complete? And
sure. So we got, as I said, we got the green light for construction start in just the end of June. The first things on the ground will be probably by Christmas. They'll start the construction of the construction camp. So we need a camp to house the construction workers. There'll probably be several hundred, probably 300 or 400 people involved in actually building. I'm talking about West Australia only. So that'll start before Christmas. The construction phase will go all the way out to about 2028. So it's a phased rollout. So you can, if you're going to build 130,000 of these little Christmas trees, you can build 20,000, 50,000, 100,000. Every time you do one of these milestones, you can stop and pause and do some experiments with it. So it'll be rolled out progressively over that 8 or 9 year period.
Okay. I think the actual question is that he's actually referring to the expansion of the universe. So
the expansion of telescopes in the universe.
That's what I was doing as well. Yeah.
So, look, I think the really neat thing about the SKA, as I said, it gives us this ability to look all the way back to this very early sort of about 1 billion years before the beginning. And we can take observations there. We can take observations at 2 billion and 3 billion and 4 billion, all the way back up to where we are today. So this is the first time we've had a chance to measure sort of in situ some of the universe's expansion history over time. And that's great, because that hasn't been able to do that before. We've got this really peculiar thing called dark energy, which I won't say too much about, but basically it's a pushing force that's present in the universe as we see it nearby to us today. Was that pushing force always there in the universe, or did it come late in the universe? So understanding how things change with time is one of the things SKA is going to do for us.
And someone was saying that they think that perhaps Arecibo might be going to be renovated or...
Obviously, to do that, given its state of disrepair, is very expensive. It might be put back together for some historical events, but it's not going to be a working astronomical observatory again. It's superseded by many of the things that are happening, including the SKA.
Will SKA be output data be publicly available to citizen scientists? Can anyone go in and yes?
Yeah. The way the observatories work normally is if you're a scientist and you apply for time, it's a competition. If you win that time, you get the data from the sky you want, and you usually have proprietary right to that for something like a year. After that year, it goes into one of these archives I mentioned before, and from that archive, it's basically accessible by anybody in the world. So it's so that's just public access. Citizen science is a different thing, where sometimes we can actually cobble people power together to solve a particular science problem. And I'm sure there'll be lots of citizen science projects for the SKO. Yeah.
And any of this research or any of these observations, like, do people overlay that with visible observations and discoveries based on that as well?
Yeah, so these days, pretty much every astronomer is what they call a multi-wavelength astronomer. In other words, to understand the universe, you can't just stick to one set of glasses or one window. You've got to look at multiple windows, so the infrared and the optical and the X-ray and the radio, because they tell you different parts of the physics, right? Different. If you want to look at gas in an object, you look in the radio. If you want to look at the stars, you look in the optical. If you want to look at the hottest gas in the galaxy, you look in the X-rays. So, you know, you choose your window to pick the physics you're looking for, and that's what astronomers do. These days, actually, other than just multi-wavelength, actually multi-messenger astronomers, because we also have, other than electromagnetic waves, we also have gravitational waves these days to look at, which are a different story again.